We're continuing in the Ramban's letter Torat Hashem Tamima in our overall series of letters of giants. Ramban Nachmanides was a doctor and he was chief rabbi in Spain. Ramban is famous for his work on Torah, his work on Talmud. One of his disciples was the famous rabbi who's known as the acronym the Rashba. He had another famous disciple. What?
Rashba's show was in Akko.
Okay. The Rashba also started off in Spain. The Ramban was forced to debate at one point in his life, and when he won the debate, so he was banished from Spain for winning the debate. And we continue in the Ramban's letter, Torat Hashem Tamima. The Ramban had mentioned that the idea that Hashem judges the world on Rosh Hashanah, and from the time of creation Hashem established it so. V'ramaz ken lebriotav b'shamayim, Hashem alluded to this concept with the zodiac of the month of Tishrei, shemazal zeachodesh u'mazal moznayim. The zodiac in the month of Tishrei is the shape of the scale. Because we're being judged on Tishrei, and ken mi shegala lecha zeh asod ve'amar lecha b'yom ploni tavo lefanav b'dvar tchina v'ishtachvaya v'tirtze levorecha. And so Hashem reveals to us this secret and says, okay, this is the day when I'm judging you, so bring a sacrifice when the temple's built. Come pray. Do things that will make you find favor on this day. And on the 10th day, that's Yom Kippur, Hashem says, fast and you'll be forgiven. So we have many actions that the Torah reveals to us. Do this and you'll come closer to your Creator. And a different action, Hashem says, I find that disgusting. That'll distance you from me. אין לך חוכמה אלא זו, ואין לך דעת ותבונה כזו, וכל חפצים לא ישבו בה. He says, so that's a tremendous wisdom to live in this world and know which actions Hashem likes or dislikes. We wouldn't have known this if not for the Torah. So one of the gifts the Torah gives us is this knowledge of which behavior ben adam na makom, vis-a-vis our Creator, is a positive behavior. Now, man has been searching throughout man's existence how he can find favor in his Creator's eyes. Usually man searches for that from an egotistical, self-centered perspective. I need God to do what I want, so let me ensure God serves me. So therefore I will serve Him. So man's service of his Creator begins by all of us. It begins from ulterior motives. Our motives aren't pure. We live in a world where we know many things are beyond our control. And so we would like that force that is greater than us, that does control things that are beyond our control, we would like that force to work in our favor. So how do we appease that force? So if you don't have a Torah, if anyone read ancient works, if it's Iliad, Odyssey, you see that people kept guessing. Oh no, I didn't bring a sacrifice for Zeus before I set sail. That's why my ship is having trouble at sea. Quickly, we'll sacrifice something in honor of Zeus. So people look for causality. People try to figure out why are things happening. And then they invent things. And in their fervor, in their imagination, in their desire to capture the gods, so then people are capable of doing many cruel things. Let me show the gods how much I love them. So it reaches the point that people sacrifice their own children. Hashem says, I've never asked for that. Our sages point out, Hashem saying, I didn't ask Abraham for that either. That's not what it says in the verses. Reread those verses. Hashem says, I'll tell you what I want. Higid lecha adam matov. We will read in this week's Haftarah. This week's Haftarah, Hashem says, I'll tell you, man, what's good. Uma Hashem elokecha doresh meimach. What does Hashem really want of you? Hashem says, I want you to love the justice. I want you to be modest people, v'atznei alechet im Elokecha. I want you to go with modesty before me. Don't take the service of Hashem and use it as a way of showing off. So Hashem clues us in. Hashem tells us, here, I'll tell you what's good. Says the Ramban, in that sense, you have an extraordinary gift in the Torah. Because the Ramban isn't yet developing this idea, but the question is, could I figure it out on my own? Is there a way I could figure out on my own how to serve Hashem? One thing we know, that in the attempt to figure it out, people have created the most abominable of services, thinking that that's the way to serve the Creator. So Hashem says, I'll tell you what's a good way to lead your life. So that's another added benefit in the Torah. And so too the Medrash in Tehillim says, Zeh she'amar ha-katuv. That's what the verse says, Ner le-ragli dvarecha ve'or l'intivati. Your word is the lamp before my feet. Your words, Hashem, are the light that shines and shows me the path. Amar David. So King David says in the longest chapter of Tanakh, in chapter 119, Bati lechalel Shabbat, teir aliyat Torah. I thought, let me desecrate Shabbos, I'll turn on a light. The Torah tells me, no, Shamot yom Shabbat lekadesho. Watch the day of Shabbos, sanctify it. Bati lenaef, King David says, I was on my way to take a married woman. Teir aliyat Torah, the Torah enlightens me and says, mot yumat anoef anu avet. You do that, you're going to get the death penalty. Hadau dichtiv ner leragli dvarecha. So the Ramban had begun by saying the mitzvot ben adam namakom, and the Ramban ends off by bringing a medrash that says even between man and his fellow man, if you want to know how to behave, you need the Torah. That's another concept the Ramban evolved into. And that leads us to another question. What types of societies could we develop without the Torah? Where could society get to? And this is a question from the time of the most ancient philosophers. How do you develop the utopian society? How can you really develop the best society? And the world has always been searching. What's the key? Ramban is saying that the Torah is giving you both the correct approach to serving Hashem, but also the correct approach to serving your fellow man. Now the example the Ramban gives also should lead us to question. What's the Ramban's example? Bati lenaef. King David says, I came to take a married woman. Wait a second, David HaMelech. You didn't know that was a bad idea? David says, the Torah tells me it's a bad idea. And without the Torah, that means a lot of work, that medrash. What's the Ramban telling us? Because we would think that it should be elementary that you can't take someone else's wife. And that leads us to another question. A very basic question. Does humanity have a conscience that humanity can trust? It's a basic question. Do we assume that every human being has a conscience and that should lead them to the right conclusions? How far? It's a tough question because, you see, the world has been killing one another from forever, from Cain and Abel, from the days of Cain and Abel. So you'll say, yeah, those are moments of heated passion because if you ask people what's right and wrong, they'll tell you what's right and wrong. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. You go to Muslim countries, they tell you it's okay to kill Christians. You go to Christian countries until this century, they'll tell you it's okay to kill Muslims. You go to Russia, and if it's in the days of Stalin, if it's in the days of Lenin, if it's in the days of Putin, there's always someone that it's okay to kill. So that's not in moments of the heat of passion. There are calculated decisions to kill. And I'm not only talking about the Nazi war machine. I'm talking about throughout world history, humanity has been killing one another. Dr. Seuss wrote a book, Sunny Side Up, Sunny Side Down. And the book is about two neighbors. One likes his sunny side up, his eggs done this way, his sandwich done this way. Another one likes it the exact other way. And they always wave one to one another. And one says about the other one, he's a nice guy. He's just got this problem. He makes his sandwiches backwards. And they wait. And then one day, one of the neighbors decides, I know, I have it. I know how I'm going to get him to realize he's wrong. He takes a rock and he throws it through the window of his neighbor. So his neighbor wakes up the next morning and says, I know how I'm going to teach him that he's got it all wrong. And he takes a rock and he throws it through his... And then he decides he can shoot at him with a slingshot. So he shoots back with a slingshot. So he puts a slingshot that has three at the same time shooting at the neighbor. So the neighbor develops one that has three and shoots back. And it keeps going. Then they get worse and worse and worse until finally they decide they're going to build this huge wall between them. So they build this huge wall and everything seems peaceful and quiet until one of them discovers that he can develop this egg that if he drops it on his neighbor's side, so then it'll destroy his neighbor's home completely. Everything will be gone. And with that, he will have won the argument. So he works at developing that egg. And he climbs up to the top of the wall to hold the egg over the neighbor. But what he doesn't know is that as he was developing this egg, his neighbor was developing the same egg. And the last page of the book, they're each facing one another, holding the egg over the wall on the other side of the wall. Each neighbor is holding it on the other side of the wall. If you drop it on mine, I'll drop it on yours. And they stand there facing off. That's the end of the book. Well, we understand, as a kid, I couldn't understand what he wanted from my life. But as an adult, you understand what Dr. Seuss was saying. This is the world, right? Initially, when there were wars, so planes used to wave to one another because they were only used to spy on one another. You'd spy, but they would wave. Then they realized, hey, you could shoot. So they took guns up to the planes. And they'd shoot from plane to plane. Wait a second. You used to wave as you were flying those planes. Now they're shooting. Then they realized they could drop bricks. So they started dropping bricks from planes during World War I. Then they realized they could drop dynamite. And then it evolved into, you can, initially they had problems because they only thought of shooting straight and sometimes they'd hit the propeller. And then the plane had a problem. So they developed a machine gun that would time with the propeller. That it would only shoot when the propeller wasn't in front of the machine gun. It was perfectly timed. So, and then finally they came up with this idea of putting a shooter on the bottom, separate people, and then on the wings, and it evolved. During World War I, things weren't so developed. Ah, so you have this great invention of a plane, but now I could shoot you, you could shoot me, I can have a submarine, I can have torpedoes, right? Things kept evolving. The same idea Dr. Seuss was talking about. So, does the human being really have a conscience? Oh yes, he does. But can you trust that conscience to lead him to the right place? This is a very important question. This question affects many ethical questions we have. Let's take a basic question. How can we expect non-Jews from all over the world to figure out the Noahide laws? Why do we expect them to figure that out? And if you'll tell me it's so obvious they should have figured it out, then I'll ask you, what about this Midrash? David HaMelech says, I would have committed adultery if the Torah didn't enlighten me that it's a bad idea. What do you mean you would have committed adultery? But shouldn't your common sense tell you you can't do that? No, you'll tell me, look at what's happening in the world, all around the world today. It's an accepted thing that people cheat on one another. So you're saying there's no reason to think that's... So then we come back to the question, but then how's the world supposed to know the seven Noahide laws? Oh, so you're saying the Torah has to teach them. Okay, so that's one answer. The question is that the only answer? I'm just saying... Okay. Okay, I'm just coming back. The Ramban began by discussing how the Torah reveals to us the secrets of how God runs the universe. The idea that on Rosh Hashanah, if you daven, it has more meaning than davening another day of the year. Okay, that's true. We wouldn't have known that without the Torah. But then the Ramban goes on to say the mitzvot between man and his fellow man are revealed to us through the Torah. And there we take a step back and say, wait a second. What about Jiminy Cricket? Yes, Jiminy Cricket, Pinocchio, he's got this conscience. He's going to keep telling him what's right, what's wrong. Okay, so man has a conscience. What do we expect of man to achieve without Torah? Because Ramban repeatedly makes the argument that man without Torah is an animal. And our question is, does it have to be that way? What was man before the Torah was given? There were good, kind people. You had an Avram Avinu, you had a Yitzchak Avinu. And you have expectations that the non-Jews will keep the Noahide laws. Where are they supposed to figure that out from? So Ben keeps arguing, they learn it from the Jews. And I say, wait a second. The Indians, all the years they never met a Jew. They were held accountable for the 7 Noahide laws, it would seem. The Indians in North America. But they didn't meet Jews. What do you want from them? Okay, but they're held accountable for it, it would seem. Oh, so that's the question. Right? That's the question. That's the question. So we discussed this in when we were learning in this series, The Letters of Giants, when we were learning the Vachanan Wasserman, we discussed one answer to that question. Right now, I want to point out that what Ramban is saying is not so easy and not so obvious. And I want to end with a famous question that came up. About 45 years ago, there was a team in South America flying towards the Olympics. True story. And as they were flying, they flew low. And there was storms outside. And their plane crashed. And when their plane crashed, it crashed on a mountaintop where there was snow and ice. And it was too stormy for any rescue teams to come out for them. So they made their way out of their plane, and they dragged everyone out, and they found some cave to stay in, and they took whatever they could off the plane, and they waited, and help didn't come. And it was too dangerous to fly close to those mountains, because other planes could crash as well. It was stormy. And so help didn't come. And they didn't have food. And some of them were wounded. And they kept believing that help would come, that their family members would come. Well, the world thought they were dead. So no one was going out and endangering themselves looking for them. And the world was mourning their death. And they figured when the storms subside and everything's calm, they'll send a team to collect the remains. In the meantime, they're alive. And there's a terrible storm outside and it's freezing. They're in some kind of cave on this mountain. They got nothing to eat. And after about 2 days, they decided they have to start eating the flesh of the people who had died in the plane crash. The first one they ate was the pilot. They said, he did this to us. So that was a famous story until finally some of them were, one or two of them were healthy enough to climb down, and they went down and they came into civilization and they were able to get the rest rescued. But that's one story that's very famous. But 100 years before that, a question was posed. Don't get upset at me. Excuse my honesty, but this is the question. If a Jew finds himself stranded in a cave, same scenario, but he has a problem. There's a dead body next to him, and there's a dead animal next to him. Which should he eat? So a dead human is rabbinically prohibited, according to Maimonides. It's a machlokas Rambam Tosfos. A dead animal is biblically prohibited. Which one should he eat? So some rabbi said, you can't tell a human to eat a human. Your basic instinct should tell you no. Another rabbi said, what do you mean? If the Torah gave this one level of prohibition, and the other one a higher level of prohibition, then basic mathematics says, as disgusting as it is to you, that's a machlokas Rambam Tosfos, whether it is biblically prohibited to eat humans or rabbinically prohibited to eat humans. Are we pired? Right? So you could argue that the Torah says don't do disgusting things. It's a biblical prohibition. You can't drink from a potty, right? Because it's considered, even if you clean out the potty, you take the pan of the potty, you clean it out real well, and then you say you're going to eat a bowl of cereal out of that. That's an isur d'oraita, a biblical prohibition, baltashaktsu. Don't do disgusting things. So you can argue that eating a human is far more disgusting than that. You could argue many things. But I'm trying to point out where the question begins. The question begins with a question. How much am I factoring my basic instinct, my basic conscience? How much does that come into play here? How much do I say, well, the Torah said, leave me alone. There's a mathematical equation here. This is biblically prohibited. That's not, so I'm okay. And again, our question stems from the Ramban, because the Ramban quotes a Medrash that seems to be counterintuitive. We would think that the human being has, in his godliness, he has the ability to discern right from wrong. Yet we have to face reality that from the beginning of time, brothers killed one another. Cain killed Hevel, the 10 tribes sold Yosef. You have a recurring theme in Jewish history. Esav tried to kill Yaakov. Yishmael tried to kill Yitzchak. Throughout our history, from the beginning of time, man was willing to do the most abominable things, including steal one another's wives, as we find just before the blood, just before the flood. The powerful ones took the daughters of man, meaning they took married women from other people, just because they had power. So, it is a recurring theme in our history that humanity has exploited their power and their conscience has not proven to stand in their way. So, again, I'm posing both sides of the question. I'm just saying Ramban certainly seems to be putting the weight on one side. Ramban says, without Torah, well, we'd be animals. That's not what we'd like to hear. But that's the direction Ramban is pushing. So we haven't finished the Ramban. We've just learned another paragraph. We'll pick up here, Be'ezrat Hashem, tomorrow night.